Welcome to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason Mike here, hanging out with you on this Friday. It's a funky Friday. We're going to play some solid funk music going in and out of the breaks, courtesy of our own DB, David Burbank, on the ones and twos. Of course, Frank Shires is here. You just heard him give you the news. He'll be back at the top and the bottom of the hour to do that. Man, you know, we got to talk about, sometimes in this gig, you got to talk about stuff that that's difficult to talk about, right? And it's things can be difficult for a variety of reasons. One, you don't want to upset people. Two, it's a really complicated issue. Three, it's been talked to death, like for whatever the reason. And tonight we're going to do something a little different because we're going to spend all of our top segment here, all of our top three stories of the day. We're going to talk about George Floyd and what's happening in Minnesota and around the country. And so it's a serious topic. It's a very complicated topic. There's a lot of fibers in this quilt, so to speak. And so so we're gonna do that. And then as the show progresses, we're gonna sort of relax a little bit, let our shoulders down. It is a Friday after all. But you know, there are some things you have to talk about. And I want to talk about this. I think we need to talk about this. And so Mike and I are going to do just that in just a second. I want to remind you guys, 98973 is the State Roofing text line. If you want to be a part of the conversation here that we're about to have, please shoot us a text message and you can be a part of it.
Here's the top three things we need to discuss. Number one.
Okay, so on Monday evening, 46-year-old George Floyd was killed by a police officer in Minneapolis. According to reports, Officer Derek Chauvin of the Minneapolis Police Department apprehended Floyd due to suspicion that Floyd was carrying a counterfeit $20 bill. Chauvin claimed that Floyd escalated the interaction, resisted arrest, and provoked the officer and three other officers to drop Floyd onto the ground and restrain him, with Chauvin pinning Floyd's neck to the asphalt with his knee. Floyd pleaded with the officers to let him up, desperately shouting that he could not breathe. I'm going to play a little audio of that now. It's a bit sensitive, but I think we need to hear it.
My face is gone. I can't breathe, man. Please let me stand. Please, I can't breathe.
Chauvin did not relent or let Floyd up. Floyd, who suffered from both coronary artery disease and hypertensive heart disease, passed away due to the pressure applied to his neck. George Floyd's family was interviewed by CNN. Tara Brown, Floyd's cousin, had this to say.
They were supposed to be there to serve and to protect, and I didn't see a single one of them lift a finger to do anything to help. What I did see was murder, and that's what I want them to be arrested and charged and convicted for.
Today, Minnesota state officials have announced that Derek Chauvin has been arrested and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman addressed the media this afternoon with the news.
Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin has been charged by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office with murder and with manslaughter.
Freeman was asked about the other three officers who were present at the incident.
The investigation is ongoing. We felt it appropriate to focus on the most dangerous perpetrator.
He didn't mention it, but the Minneapolis Police Department has fired those three officers as well. According to Freeman, this is the fastest moving case that he has ever prosecuted.
This case has moved with extraordinary speed. This criminal action took place on Monday evening, May 25th, Memorial Day. I'm speaking to you at 1 o'clock on Friday, May 29th. That's less than 4 days. That's extraordinary. We have never charged a case in that kind of time frame. And we can only charge a case when we have sufficient admissible evidence to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. As of right now, we have that.
He took a moment to lay out the list of evidence that the county has against Chauvin.
We have the citizens' cameras, video, the horrible, horrific, terrible thing that we've all seen over and over again. We have the officer's body-worn camera. We have statements from some witnesses. We have a preliminary report from the medical examiner. We have discussions with an expert. All of that has come together So we felt, in our professional judgment, it was time to charge, and we have so done.
The police body cam footage Freeman cited has not been released to the public, though news sources like CNN have posted the citizens' footage. And there's now surveillance video from the outside of two nearby restaurants that has been released. And the consensus from all of that footage so far is that Floyd neither resisted arrest nor did anything but comply with orders from the four officers. In addition, today, the Minneapolis Police Department released files for 18 complaints against Chauvin over the course of his 19-year career on the force. Of those 18 complaints, only two of them resulted in any consequences for Chauvin, both resulting in a letter of reprimand, according to the Minneapolis Police Department. Meanwhile, in our own state, officers are responding to the murder. Pierce County Sheriff Paul Pastor noticed the necessity of calling out our own.
When it happens, we need to stand up and fess up and clean up. And by cleaning up, I'm not talking about sweeping under the carpet. I'm talking about real cleanup. I'm talking about, yes, we have to hold ourselves accountable. When we do something that is wrong, that we should know is wrong, or we do know is wrong and we do it anyway, that's a mistake of the heart. And you shouldn't have a badge on if you're making those kind of mistakes.
You know, we talk about this. I say this every time we talk about law enforcement. It's a job that I can't imagine doing. I can't understand the stress that you're under when every time you get out of your car and approach someone in the public, you don't know what's going to happen, and it could be a dangerous situation. But there are good cops and there are bad cops, right? And I'm not putting any percentages on it. I think that the vast majority of law enforcement are good people trying to do the right thing. And man, it makes me feel good when those good cops stand up and they say, we will not tolerate this. This is unacceptable, and call each other out.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that kind of gets lost sometimes in the discussion about this is that while bad cops are dangerous to citizens, bad cops are particularly dangerous to good cops.
Yep.
Because they create a perception and attention.
Yes.
That escalates toward the people who have nothing to do with it, who have done nothing but had, you know, to the best of their ability, positive interactions with people, or the appropriate interactions with people, even if they weren't positive. And that's always what law enforcement always explained to me, like they are the first ones to need to weed out the bad cops.
Yeah.
They feel also like maybe the public doesn't always understand the pressure you're under when you're out there. But the video in this is pretty compelling.
Yes.
It doesn't appear to indicate. I mean, you can't get a clear eye sight on everything if you combine all the video, but you have about 80% certainty when you're looking at it that you don't hear or see any sort of thing that seems like the type of resistance that would warrant, you know, a knee on the neck when someone's already cuffed and down
and unresponsive for nearly 3 minutes.
Yeah,
and he kept his knee on his neck.
It doesn't appear to be that, but that's what a trial is for, and so now we're going to at least get a chance to find out in a public manner.
Number two.
The protests sparked this week across the country, spawning from Minneapolis, where thousands were chanting, "Prosecute the police, no justice, no peace."
Prosecute the police, no justice, no peace.
CNN's Sarah Sidner was outside a police precinct in Minneapolis today.
This is the third precinct here in Minneapolis. The police department is there. If you look on the top of the department, you will see officers standing there. They are holding guns that basically fire tear gas. And at times they have pointed it directly at people in the crowd when they think that they're trying to get through a barricade that leads into the parking lot there. You also will see a bunch of folks with their hands up. This is an old chant that has really taken hold since the case of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Hands up, don't shoot. But you're also hearing new things from this crowd. You are seeing people that are, most of them are masked, but there are quite a few people who are not masked. And you're hearing people say, the virus is not as dangerous as the police, or that police are the virus. That is a new chant that you're hearing as coronavirus has taken hold. There is a lot, as I said, of pain here, Jake. People very frustrated with what happened.
Sarah Sidner was not the only CNN reporter in Minneapolis covering unrest in the city. Reporter Omar Jimenez was live on air when police in riot gear apprehended him and his team for being positioned in an unauthorized area. As Jimenez was reporting over the air, police announced that he was under arrest. Here's a bit of that.
This is among the state patrol unit that was advancing up the street, saying and scattering the protesters at that point for people to clear the area. And so we walked away. I'm sorry?
You're under arrest.
Okay. Do you mind telling me why I'm under arrest, sir? Why am I under arrest, sir?
Officers, we're going to get in and he's on the air right now.
Okay.
You are arresting him live on CNN. We told you before that we are with CNN.
If you're just tuning in, you are watching our correspondent, Omar Jimenez, being arrested by state police in Minnesota. We're not sure why our correspondent is being arrested.
Jimenez was subsequently released from custody after about an hour. The police who arrested him claimed that Jimenez and his production crew were told to move and did not. Due to the protests throughout the state of Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Roseville have all instituted curfews until 8 p.m., from between 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. for at least the next 3 days. Elsewhere in the country, protesters are demonstrating their support for George Floyd. In New York, hundreds of demonstrators marched across the Brooklyn Bridge chanting Black Lives Matter. In Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Police Department announced that it will be taking law enforcement action against any protesters who show signs of violence. In Georgia, Kentucky, and Wisconsin, protesters were out and vocal.
Man, okay, here's what I think about the protests. I don't like the destruction of stores and businesses and violence, but here's the thing. This is not simple, right? You're dealing with people who are in a heightened state. There are people in this country who walk around, and I am not one of them because of the color of my skin. There are people who walk around this country afraid of what could happen to them at the hands of law enforcement. And if you look back at our history and the things that are currently happening, this isn't a problem that's gotten worse. This is a problem that we now have on video. That's the difference. And for people like me, I can walk around my whole life and not pay any attention to this. But you've got folks who are scared, who are lashing out. Now, from what I understand, the majority of folks who are out there protesting and expressing their opinions here aren't doing this awful stuff, and they're doing it peacefully. But you get some fires set, you get some windows smashed, and that sort of takes over the narrative. And while I'm not excusing that behavior, I'm condemning it. I'm saying you shouldn't be doing that, even if you're on the same side. If people are coming out and they're on the same side, right? And folks go out and they smash stuff and they burn stuff and they set stuff on fire. You're harming the message. You're pulling focus away from why everybody is out there, and then you're only going to have people talking about the property damage or the violence. And it I don't know. This feels like a something I'm about to step in here. But look at the protests that happened. What was it, a week or two ago? Where you had people armed to the teeth with weapons standing on government property, spitting at sometimes, shouting into the faces of law enforcement, and there were no incidences here. But you have a group of predominantly non-white people, and all of a sudden the riot gear comes out. Those law enforcement officers who were protecting people at the open up protests, they didn't show up in riot gear. They were in standard police uniform. And the immediate response to stuff when it's a group of people who aren't white is clamp down, is a show of strength, is intimidation. There's no listening. Like Trump tweeted back at the former protest. He tweeted, "Hey, let everybody chill out. These are good people. Let's listen to them. Let's hear what they have to say. Let's strike a deal." Right? And the response to this is thugs and force and attack and tear gas and rubber bullets and all that. And I'm just, it upsets me, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some. I don't disagree with you. I mean, it was. I think Martin Luther King said, "What riots are the language of the unheard."
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I'm not suggesting that I'm pro riot. I'm not. Although, if you want to know why CNN is in town, it's because it got bad
right
there. I mean, so
right
there is a method to that. Although I would say most of the rioting is, and especially the destruction and the looting, that's all opportunistic. That's crime.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be treated as anything other than that.
Correct.
Some of the really aggressive protesting is designed to get attention. So I understand that as well. I've heard the comparisons with the cops showing up at the protesters at the state capitals, the ones who seem to always, no matter what the protest, seem to wear a sidearm. I'm not sure I understand the nexus between the two, but go ahead. I mean, I guess if it's legal in your state, do it.
Sure. You know,
it doesn't really bother me all that much. What bothers me more, I don't know that it's a fair comparison between the two, if only for this reason. It was those protests that got an unusual amount of coverage, the Capitol protests with the Second Amendment folks. That was like, you know, two dozen people, even mm-hmm. though it got an inordinate amount of attention. This was more like a few thousand people. And so cops are going to show up, I think, regardless of color. If you had, because they've shown up in riot gear with the, you know, Unite the Right protest, you mm-hmm. know, things like that. So
mm-hmm.
so I'm
fair.
Not sure that that's always a direct one-for-one comparison. But I will say that the folks who are reacting to this are not reacting to this one death. They're reacting to
yes.
what they feel like is a buildup of pressure and a buildup of an idea that they're not going to get. If not for cell phone footage, how many of these things that we now know about would not have been covered in the same manner? And so, and again, I'm not suggesting that you know, I don't know what you do in this situation exactly. I'm glad that the cop was arrested. For everything I can see. Now, everything I can see.
Yeah.
And we don't get the full picture, but we're seeing a fair bit of video. Seems to indicate somebody who stepped way beyond what department policy would be in any department.
Yeah.
And I think that law enforcement would agree with that.
They do.
And so in this particular case, there is evidence that the system is handling it a little better than it has in the past. I would say the protests are a reaction to something much, much bigger
yeah.
than this particular incident.
More Cairo Nights, everybody, coming up next. Stay tuned. Welcome to a Funky Friday here on Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike, thanks for apologizing for the weather, Frank, because I do blame you.
I know.
I don't know if you know that.
You know, it's the old Harry Wappler. The old Harry Wappler. I will take, I will apologize and take responsibility for the crappy weather as long as I get blamed for the good stuff, too.
That sounds like a fair deal.
It is.
Yeah, I don't mind that. Okay, yeah, you heard it in Frank's news. I think we should spend a minute talking about it. Governor Jay Inslee spoke today about the relaxing of some requirements. You know, the stay-at-home order that he initially put in place is going to expire this weekend. And so the new directive is basically this. If you are a county, the main thing that got relaxed was the cases, the number of new cases per 100,000 people in a county, and that over a 2 week span. And that initially, I think, was 10, and that has been up to 25 cases. And so because of that, a few more counties are looking to be able to apply for phase two, which means the opening of more restaurants and hair salons, barbershops, that kind of thing. A bunch of businesses. But I think the big thing here, too, is that Inslee said if you're a county and you don't quite make it right, like you're close, but no cigar, they're going to listen to you here. In fact, here's Inslee saying it.
We are going to be open to options presented by counties who don't quite meet the phase two requirements, but might be able to propose certain activities that they can really demonstrate are safe. You might call it sort of phase 1.5, if you will.
Now, I'm happy about that. I don't know about you, Mike.
Meaning that places are starting to reopen? I think everyone's probably happy.
Everybody's excited about reopening, and I like that there's some wiggle room here, right? I think you've seen a lot of aggravation, a lot of tension based on the fact that one side is saying, like, no, this number, we have to meet this number, and then the other side is saying, like, yeah, but there's other stuff that needs to be considered. Now, it seems like people are more open to a dialogue, more open to, like, look, I have this concern on this side. You have this concern on this side. Well, let's meet in the middle and talk about it. And if there's a realistic, common sense solution here to be had, it feels like it's closer to being had. And that's encouraging to me.
Yeah, I think that it's going to allow. So under this directive, what we're really talking about mostly in our area is Snohomish, Pierce, and King counties.
Yeah.
Snohomish and Pierce are going to push for to full entry into phase two, which is a lot of the barbershops and salons are opened, restaurants at a limited capacity, 50% capacity, a lot of spacing, a lot of specific requirements associated with those, still no bar service. King County's a little further down. What they've decided to do, what he was referencing in phase 1.5, is they're going to allow in certain areas that they realize, I mean, we had this discussion about fishing, for example, in certain areas where they realize that maybe the blanket restrictions were not as effective. I mean, why yes to golf and no to tennis,
right,
things like that.
Right.
I think that they are going to allow for spot changes. That's the way they've kind of described it. So in other words, King County will be able to pursue, sort of go down the items list and check the boxes of the things that they want and don't, and not the ones that they don't qualify for yet, in an effort to get things up and going. And so that could be businesses like hair salons, barbershops, outdoor restaurant dining. Those are the things that Dow Constantine, the county executive, has said those would probably be first on the list. And so we may see some of that next week.
Pierce, Skagit, and Whatcom. Pierce, Skagit, and Whatcom qualify under this new threshold for illnesses. And another big thing that he talked about was if you do go back to work or if you are currently at work, unless you don't have any in-person reactions, if you're working by yourself alone, this doesn't apply. But starting June 8th, you will have to wear some facial covering, some sort of a mask at your job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in our business, we've already purchased them.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I think a lot of places are doing that. So many places have made them. I mean, weirdly enough, one of the good things about everything being shut down, and there are a few good things, I mean, aside from the potential health benefits of doing so, is it allowed the supply chain to catch up a little bit.
Right.
Masks are relatively easy to get right now. Disinfectant stuff and sanitizing stuff is much easier to get now than it was prior. And so it's allowed, I think, bars and restaurants in particular, but other places like salons, any place where you're going to have a lot of people coming in, it's allowed people to both develop a procedure because, I mean, the guidelines are broad and every place's procedure is going to be somewhat different, and it's allowed places to actually build the supply chain to get these things. I mean, in some cases, it's the company that does your that services your dishwasher is actually the one that's going to be providing the overall sanitizing products because they have the supply line for that. And it's forced everyone to be kind of creative. And so in a weird way, I think that now it's starting to feel much more appropriate from at least a supply standpoint, if not a health standpoint, to start moving the bar up a little bit.
I'm really curious to see what happens in places because King, like you said, King is going to be sort of last in line as far as counties go in Washington. I'm curious to see what happens in the other counties. And we have some, there's been a staggering of the timeline. Some counties have been open for a couple days or a week or so now, and some are just starting to get into it. And then we'll see what happens, what both from a COVID standpoint to like an infection rate standpoint to just societal. What things are people comfortable doing again? Are they comfortable doing things in a way that looks like it was before? Or, like you say, oh, this will be great. Let's open up all the restaurants, for example. Well, what happens theoretically if most people aren't comfortable doing that? And so you have the option for 50% capacity, but you're still not meeting it. I mean, those things, those questions, I'm looking forward to getting the answers to.
Well, unless you get an answer you don't like, right? I mean,
sure.
You know, it's. I think a lot of businesses are wondering what people are going to be comfortable with, but the city and state don't have an answer for that.
Right.
Right. If you open up, and no one shows up, they're not going to bring you people. You know, you're going to be in a bad way. And that's been the concern from business owners from the very beginning, is that it's not just a matter of flipping a switch, opening the doors, and everyone comes flooding back in. People's comfort level has changed. I think there's a whole bunch of people who are pretty anxious for things to and are going to force normal. And then there's a whole bunch of people who are never going to return. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting, way too interesting, to see how that plays out.
What do you think? I mean, are you, let's say shows happen again. Are you going to go? Are you going to be 98973? Where are you at on this line? I really do want to take the temperature of people. DB, are you feeling, because you're out in a your job at Starbucks, you're among people, right? I know it's a little different. It's mostly a drive-through kind of
yes,
store.
Yes, but I'm collectively around all of my fellow employees in a very enclosed space. Yeah. Definitely.
Do you think that's had an effect on what you might do in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes you appreciate having the face mask more, because you are having to talk to people from a pretty close distance, and just the, you know, particles that you don't want getting necessarily on someone, and you don't realize that until you all have the masks on, and then you realize, oh, okay, this is the safest way, I think, to do this.
Yeah, I just can't imagine going back to, like, a full-on show or something like that. Even if, I mean, vaccine's great, but even then, I might still be pretty nervous because I still don't want to catch something.
Yeah, my guess is it's going to happen kind of slowly, particularly in the packed house sort of arenas. I think that's going to make it a little bit harder. But I think that, you know, if I took some time off shows, or shows were a little bit more, I mean, it would be weird, because part of the reason to go to a good show is the crowd. Right. I mean, you know, and so I don't know. I feel real worried for the music venues and how they're going to get by in this, because that has been, I don't see an easy short term solution for them. And I hope that if other businesses can normalize, that whatever money is available to help businesses in Seattle works toward the arts community, in particular, the live music venues of all genres, because it would be nice to see the city not lose all of that, because we've lost a lot of it as it is.
Yeah. More Cairo Nights after this. Welcome back, everybody. Cairo Nights, Mason, Mike. We're going to talk a little bit about virus. And then we'll stop. How's that sound? We got a guest coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. He's the editor of the Puget Sound Business Journal. His name's Ryan Lambert. And they did something today. They published something that is just remarkable. And we're going to talk all about it. I'm not even going to tell you what it is, other than it is a profile of people all across this country who are business owners, and the things that they've gone through. And it is just, it's a remarkable piece of journalism. So that comes up at 8 o'clock. First, turns out that, and I don't know why I didn't think about this, that if you get one, let's say you got one coronavirus, right? There's one, you sneeze and you got like 100 of them in the air, 1,000 of them in the air, whatever it is. I just sort of assumed that you get one and you get sick, because you got the virus. But that's not the case at all. There's the issue, it's a term called viral load, where if you look at vaccines, right, Mike, like when you go get a vaccine for something, for the flu, let's say, what they do is they give you a little bit of the flu so that your body learns how to fight it.
Right.
And so that seems to be the issue now. It isn't necessarily so much about whether or not you've been exposed at all to coronavirus, but really how much of it you've been exposed to.
Yeah, that's why they are suggesting that the masks, the distancing, those things stay in place. Because what they said, it's better to try to regulate not zero exposure for the people highly at risk. Absolutely.
Right.
For the rest of us, they know at some point you're going to be exposed. There's almost no way around it. So the reason that they're making these suggestions about washing your hands and about the masks, about the about keeping your distance, about wiping surfaces, all of that, there isn't really a presumption by, at least by the researchers and by the scientists, that we will not be exposed. The presumption is, and this is what the science seems to be bearing out, that if we can reduce what you said earlier, the viral load, in other words, you can reduce the amount of exposure, not just any exposure, tiny, a little bit of the virus, your body generally can fight off almost anything.
Uh-huh.
But the problem has been that too much, and it replicates, and suddenly your body is in an all-out war with it, and that's when you start feeling the effects of it. And sometimes, you know, for 100,000 of us now, we lose that war. And so the idea is that what you're really trying to do is make yourself get minimal contact, but really expecting zero contact isn't realistic. And that the nice thing about that is it actually means that these things that are not, you know, you don't have to live in a hermetically sealed chamber.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't, like the wearing the mask, all of these little small things actually collectively can reduce the viral load, even if you are around people who might have it. And the fact is you're going to be at some point if you haven't already been. At some point.
Yeah. This is like me on a diet. It's like I can't cut it out completely. I need to have a cookie once in a while. And so this is like, yeah, one cookie ain't going to kill you. One cookie's not so bad for you. It's just when you down a whole sleeve, that's when you get into some issues. I think this is important, especially for people who people who are like resistant to wearing masks or don't want to do it for whatever reason. And there are a wide variety of reasons that people don't want to do it. It's so important to know that this is not an all or nothing thing, that there is a gray area here. And all you're trying to do is reduce the harm, right? A seatbelt isn't going to prevent you necessarily from dying in a car crash, but it will help. It will lower that risk. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, so what they're, I mean, the nice thing is that it's not like the scientific belief behind this has not advanced. And so I feel like it's important that we where we can start walking back worries and walking ahead on other areas,
yeah.
It's important that we do that. So, for example, the surface cleaning, the surface transmission of the disease. Now the thinking is that the surface transmission is not, it's a threat. But it just takes, you just transfer, it's such an inefficient way, and you transfer so little of the virus by touching something that somebody else touched who had the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Your transmission rate is relatively low, and that means, again, low viral load.
Right.
But someone, you know, coughs in the air that you were there breathing, that's thousands of droplets, that's a high viral load, and that's why the masks are important, and that's why also, if you do touch a desk and then touch your face, you should try to wash your hands as often as possible, but it shouldn't be a panic moment. Generally speaking, the science now says that is way lower of a risk,
yeah,
than the other things that we know about, the breathing, the coughing, the sneezing, the droplets. That's the risk.
More Kyra Nights after this.